Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode of TFL Car Chat, because we are in Gothenburg, Sweden, and I am with two of my best friends in the automotive review biz. To my right is Sofian from Redline Reviews, and to his right is Mason from Car Confections. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Roman.
Yes, thanks for having us.
So let me ask you, Sofian, what are we doing in Gothenburg?
Well, we are here to take a look at this thing right behind you, Roman. It's the new XC90, the 2025 and a half.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, huh?
Yeah, Volvo does these like half-year increments, which that's because the 2025 is already out, and then this will come out in early 2025. So.
And so since I've got, I would say, two of the top YouTube reviewers, we're not just going to talk about Volvo, but we're going to talk about the general state of the automotive biz. We're going to go kind of brand by brand and talk about our favorite and some of our least favorite cars. But let's start with you, Mason. What do you think of the new XC90? Or I'm going to say newish.
You know, I think the new XC90, they did a really good job with it. I mean, I may would have wished for it to be all new, but for a, you know, existing platform, the updates that they made, I think, is exactly what it needed to be. The front end looks different enough, and I like the new headlights, and the interior tech was really the area I thought was the most dated. So now that that's been updated, I'm pretty happy with it.
You agree, Sophia?
Yeah, I mean, the current generation, it's been out since 2015 as a 2016. I mean, it's almost 10 years old, but at the same time, it was such a timeless design. It was so forward-thinking that it's aged extremely well. So, I mean, they didn't really need to do too much on the outside. Like Mason said, the headlights are new, the grille's new, but the interior is basically where I also said was it needed changes. So we got that new screen. I think that's what I think the typical XC90 buyer is going to want.
All right, we got to talk about the elephant in the room, right? So last week we were together.
Yes, we were.
In Orange County, California. Mm-hmm. And we were driving really what should have been the replacement for that, which is the EX90. So the all-electric three-row mm-hmm. Volvo. And of course, it's more expensive. Mm-hmm. It's more electric because the one behind us is a plug-in hybrid, but the EX90 is all electric. Do you think that Volvo kept this guy around, the one behind us, because you know the winds of change have blown and now people want plug-in hybrids instead of all electrics, or they want regular internal combustion?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that Volvo saw the potential there with the market for the XC90. This is their best seller here in the U.S., so it would be crazy of them, Roman, I think, to get rid of the nameplate. Because, I mean, you think of EX90, it has no lineage to Volvo. The name, at least, doesn't have any lineage. So this has the history, so I'm not surprised. And plus, like you said, people are a little apprehensive to go fully EV. So the fact that this only comes with electrified powertrains, I think, is a win for Volvo.
How about you, Mason?
Yeah, I think the same. The thing I really like about the XC90 is the fact you can get a traditional just full gasoline setup, so it fills the market of someone that doesn't even want a hybrid, although it does have mild hybrid technology. And then, of course, they have the plug-in hybrid, which is kind of the middle step between that and the all-electric EX90. So you have an option really in all powertrain fronts, which I think is good. And then also the fact that the EX90 is a little bit more like futuristic, especially when it comes to like the interior cabin and some of the technology. I think it's good to give customers both options, you know, maybe more futuristic EX90 or more traditional XC90.
So you guys have been really great in giving us journalistic answers, so I'm going to make this harder. I'm going to reach in my pocket here, boys.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to whip out $100,000. Right? $100,000. I'm going to give you each $100,000.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the High Road ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. High Road makes it easy, and we like easy.
The guy behind it starts at 60, goes to 80, the EX90, right? Three-row electric, competes in the same world, starts at 80, goes to 100. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you 100K. Which one do you buy? See, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Didn't prep for that in advance. Honestly, what I would probably say is I would choose a T8 plug-in hybrid XC90 with all the options. So mm-hmm. that would probably look about 85,000, I think. At least for me specifically, we enjoy owning a plug-in hybrid, and the 32 miles that it goes on a single charge is more than enough for most of my daily driving. But it also gives me the freedom and flexibility if I want to take, you know, it on a long road trip. It's going to have the range without having to charge.
And so what do you do with that 15K left over? What are you going to get?
I don't know. Down payment on a house, something like that.
No, you got to get a car. This money. I'm serious. You got 15K now. So yeah. You could buy a used car. You could buy, you know, that'll get you like a good, I don't know, used Toyota 86 if you're a sports car kind
That's
of person.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely. Get like a sports car for the weekend. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. would be good.
All right. How about you, Sofiane?
So you're giving me 100 grand and I have to buy.
One of the two. You can't go buy. Oh,
it has to be either the EX90 or the
X90. Exactly, yeah.
Okay, because I was about to ask, can I get a different brand?
No, you can't. At the end of the show, you can, but now you now you got to get a Volvo.
Ooh. That's the thing is, like, I like the changes they made to the XC90, but also for me personally, I like the modern feel of the EX90. It feels like it should have been the new XC90, and it's not, because this is built on the old platform still. I actually would probably just buy the EX90, because if you look at the EX90 price delta between this at the top end, this is like 85 grand. You can go to an EX90 for 85 grand or 90 grand for something that's comparable equipped. So I'd probably go to the EX90, and then with my leftover 10K, if it was like 90 grand, I don't even know what I would buy. I'd buy something older, something from the 90s, maybe like an old Acura Integra or RSX Type S or something like that.
So if I bend the rules, right, the call is you wait a year, uh-huh. Then you buy the EX90.
Right, because it's used. Yeah. it'll be a lot cheaper.
For like 60.
Yeah.
And then you have 40K.
That's the truth.
That's true.
To spend on the EX30.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Because that also would be in that price range.
And speaking of the EX30, I mean, we're here at Volvo's headquarters in Gothenburg. Mm-hmm. So we can't tell you about all like the prototypes running around. But we did see a lot of EX30s.
We did.
Which, are... a car that is eagerly awaited mm-hmm. In America. And because of strange political times, right, where the U.S. government and now Canada put 100%
tariff
on it, we really won't get those cars for mm-hmm. for a while. And I know out of all the cars, at least out of all electric cars, that was a car that many journalists were super excited to get. And for those of you who don't know, it's a small little electric crossover mm-hmm. Built by Volvo in China.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I actually flew out to Milan, I think it was late last year, to see that car in person before Volvo revealed it. And I'm super excited for it. So when we got the news that it's going to be delayed, and we honestly have no idea when it's going to come to the U.S.
Did you drive it?
I didn't drive it, badly, no. I think, Macy, you had a chance to drive it.
Yeah.
So tell me about it.
We really liked it. I mean, it's very quick. As you expect out of an electric vehicle, it has the instantaneous torque. And like I said, the more time I spent with it, the more I liked it. I mean, it is very small, but for those of buyers that aren't looking for like a giant amount of cargo capacity, it has plenty of room for four people to ride along. It has kind of the signature Volvo design. I think it looks really good.
Yeah, and I think they nailed it on the design mm-hmm. front.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller SUVs can kind of look like a jelly bean or something stupid, and I like the way the EX30
looks. And the pricing, ever since electric cars have started to come out, people have been like yearning for an affordable electric car. Mm-hmm. And the closest we got, I think, was the Bolt.
GM just killed.
Yeah, and then it started like a no sale because it was starting houses on fire.
Right.
I have this personal belief that, right now there's this pullback in people, especially in America, buying electric cars. But People are saying because it's kind of because we rushed into electrification too quickly. Mm-hmm. I think it's more than that. I think basically outside of Tesla, none of the car manufacturers have actually built electric cars that people lust after. I'm not saying they don't want them. I'm not saying they're not practical, but they're not like lust worthy.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the ones that are lust worthy are really expensive. Like yeah. they're well over $100,000. Like I'm thinking like Audi e-tron GT, Porsche Taycan. Yeah, yeah, those are $150,000 to $250,000 easily, although they're really attractive on the used car market, like you said, Roland. But yeah, I would like to see, I mean, I think everyone in the industry would like to see a sub $30,000 EV that'll go 300 miles on a full charge and charge in less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think the closest thing that we have now would maybe be the Equinox EV. We actually got a lot of positive reception when we did a video on that because it does have that lower price tag and it still has a lot of like the traditional elements that a lot of people are, you know, wanting in an SUV. It's not like stepping into a spaceship. It's just an electric SUV.
And the other problem I think with electric vehicles in America is that dealers don't really want to sell them, right? Because a dealer doesn't make any money or not as much money selling an electric vehicle because there's not a lot of need for maintenance. And so a significant portion of the dealership is fixing the car. And you don't really have to like change the oil, change the brakes, you know, fix the head gasket.
Right. Don't you just love it when you have an EV and you get those, or you own an EV and you get those stuff from the dealer saying, you should bring in your car for an oil change. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Have you got that?
I've seen friends that get that all the time. And I'm just like, you don't even have an engine. Why would they even do that? But again, it's like an automated system and the dealer doesn't even check that.
I know, it's crazy. All right, so how do you guys think Volvo's doing as a brand in America? You know, that's a small, relatively for America, right? They don't sell hundreds of thousands of cars.
Right.
So they're a relatively small brand. Obviously, you know, people value the safety that Volvos bring. Mm-hmm. They kind of value the I would say, Nordic
charm
and design of the car. Mm-hmm. But I think the company is actually doing very well. I think it's healthy, and I think they're selling cars. And, you know, a lot of people were a little wary when Volvo was purchased by Geely, that Geely was going to change it. But, you know, we're here, and it certainly doesn't feel Chinese to me. It feels very Swedish.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Volvo as a brand, I agree with you. I think they're doing pretty well. They've got pretty strong products. I mean, some of their products are starting to get a little up there in terms of age, especially like the current XC90. But you know what? At the same time, it still sells so well. So it's kind of like the way, you know, Toyota is with a lot of their cars, really old, but they still sell well. So if Volvo can pull that off, I don't blame them for kind of keeping, like, for example, not giving this a full redesign, just kind of keeping it along the same platform, but making small incremental improvements.
Yeah, and Mason, they're certainly doing better than Saab.
Saab?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that as well. I think that Volvo as a brand is one that has identity. It definitely, like, takes to heart the Swedish character, and I think that's why so many people buy them. Yeah. You know, and that's why I also think that the sales haven't, like, completely fallen off, despite it being almost 10 years old.
Yeah.
Because people, they just love the design of a Volvo. They love the special characteristics that you're going to get there. And, you know, I think the big question mark, in my mind at least, was, like, what are they going to do with the next generation XC90? Because that'll probably follow suit with the XC60 and the XC40 and those things. So now that we have the updated one, I'm pretty happy with the direction that the brand's going.
There's one thing I guess I could criticize with Volvo is it's probably their infotainment systems. They struggled with that, right? Because if you think about Sensus Connect when that first came out, it wasn't very good. It was one of the slow, like it looks great, but it was the software was laggy. It crashed. It was really slow. And they're also still kind of slow to implement wireless CarPlay. That's what I've also noticed. Like even this one here doesn't have wireless CarPlay. The EX90, which we just drove, has wireless CarPlay, but not really. It's coming in an over-the-air update. And I feel like they've been saying that for a while, too.
Yeah, they're kind of following Tesla's lead, and that is not a good lead to be following, right? Where, well, you won't get it now, but don't worry, it's coming later.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel that especially with, like, we bought a Cybertruck, as you guys know, and we're still waiting for full self-driving. And we basically paid
$20,000. You'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah, and we've been waiting a long time, and there's, like, no date as to when it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I kind of like, you know, the old-school method of, you pay for something and you get it
right away.
And it's not like, hey, here's a check and we'll bring it to you sometime in the future.
I like to call that like a loan method. You're basically providing the brand a loan to develop the technology that you already paid for, which, I don't like that from a customer standpoint.
Yeah, and I think Volvo, just like a lot of the car companies, are struggling with the software. You're right. Yeah, it's just, it's software is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's what Tesla does well,
is
software. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, because, like, one thing is, like, they're going all in with Google, which personally for me, and this is just a personal thing, is I prefer Apple over Google stuff because right. they don't play nicely.
No, like, they don't like each other. Yeah, the walled garden of Apple does not broach money.
Right, like for example, like, you know, the Google Play Store that the new Volvos have, like I use Apple Music a lot. And if you don't have, you know, the CarPlay functionality, you can't download Apple Music from the Google Play Store because they don't play together. But then there's one brand that actually does have Apple Music, it's Mercedes. They actually have it in their native system, and I'm trying to figure out why they have it in there because nobody else has it and stuff. So,
behind the scenes agreement, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's just one of those questions that we may not ever know.
And Apple is not exactly giving the stuff away for free, right?
No.
I mean,
no.
So it's expensive, and I think Toyota was the last holdout, right, of a major car company that wouldn't go with Apple, and then eventually the customer said, no, we want it.
Right.
And now, of course, GM is kind of also holding out, at least on their electric cars.
No CarPlay for you in their electric cars.
That's every car.
Where do you think that's going to end up? You think it's become such an integral part of people's lives that they now demand that the car companies provide it? Or do you think the car companies can kind of do a workaround? Kind of like Tesla does, right? Tesla doesn't have CarPlay.
Right.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I think GM's going to have to do some backpedaling on that because, you know, they like to say, like, during the press program for that, they would say, we don't need the CarPlay because the native system is so good. I would argue that the native system on that car needs work still. Like, you have a Cybertruck. The last time I was in a model, the newest Tesla was my editor Rob's Model 3 Performance. And that, again, doesn't have CarPlay, but their native system is so good.
Right.
It has Apple Music built in. It has the voice to text.
And podcast.
It has everything built
in. And navigation is based on Google Maps.
Right. Yeah. And I was kind of just like, I don't really need it here. So if you can do a really good native system, you could theoretically get rid of it. But if it still needs work, if it's still not as good as, you know, what you're used to on your phone, you're gonna miss it.
I agree with all that, but at the same time, I also feel like most people, they want the cross-car functionality of, like, I just hop in, you know, my spouse's car, and it doesn't have a different brand infotainment that I have to learn. I want to just plug in my phone, or wireless is what most people want, and just have it automatically connect, and then I have the native system that I'm used to, whether that be Android Auto or Apple CarPlay. It's super easy to just use in any vehicle.
All right, so I had an interesting thing happen to me. I just bought for the company a BMW i8, and this is a 2015, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're going back several generations in BMW's iDrive. And it's the old one with the little round rotary knob, the little pull.
Like, that's like iDrive 3.
Yeah. And I got to say, I learned two things because I bought it in Anchorage and drove it 3,500 miles back to Boulder. So I spent a lot of time on the road.
Yeah.
Two important lessons I got. First, what I thought was super complicated back in the day, right? Remember the rub was that there were like menus nested with menus. It's so much easier compared to like what's in this car.
Right.
Right? Or even in the current BMW where you're like, functions. And you're like guessing at where, you know, like the massaging seats are.
Right, because they're getting rid of buttons. That's
the problem. Exactly. Yeah. And the other thing I found out, and we can talk about this as well, is it was so nice not to have any driver aids. Oh my God, it was so nice. I just got in the car, and it barely has, like, it doesn't even have adaptive cruise control, so it just got, like, you know, old school cruise control where you set the speed limit and it goes. It was such a pleasure to actually physically own, control, and drive the machine, as opposed to the machine, like, owning and controlling and driving you. I had such a nice time, and I just forgot how fun it is to drive something. Yeah, and right. I think we're seeing that in a lot of these cars. So, like, I don't know what you guys like, but when I get in a car and the thing has some kind of a lane keep system and it starts to take the steering wheel and, you know, either turn it or I'm fighting it, immediately I'm, like, bummed out.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, and I would also argue that some systems are better than others.
Oh,
like, there are some,
right,
like...
Who's got the best? Who's got the worst?
Well, Subaru's is probably, for me, one of the worst. Theirs is very intrusive.
It's, oh, no.
Yeah. Yes. I was like, that's right. You don't have access to Subaru still. Their eyesight system is very intrusive. Yeah. It's always beeping at you. It's always telling you to pay attention.
Toyota started beeping, too, now.
Did they really beep? Because I thought they've been going to the wheel that vibrates, the steering wheel.
No, just in general, Toyotas have become very beepy.
Yeah.
Right, so Subaru's the worst.
Well, it's one of the worst
because
for sure.
Because it's very intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's one of the best? What's your...
So Subaru definitely stands out as the worst, honestly. Yeah. It was very frustrating. We had one on loan for a week, and I took it on a road trip, and I was... if I was like, if you beat me one more time, I'm going to drive you into a cliff.
Look, I've used EyeSight, right? And I think the brilliance of Subaru is the name.
Yeah,
right?
It's a great name.
Like, you got these two sensors that stick out, mm-hmm. and they're kind of very prominent.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the best system by far is GM Supercruise.
I was about to say Supercruise.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of followed by Ford, and then everybody else's. But at the end of the day, what you end up having... And all these systems, even Super Cruise, right, is a system that just nags, right?
Yeah.
It's just, they're just naggy, and you're like, just let me drive. science has proved that humans are really good at driving
mm-hmm.
and really good at not driving. It's that stuff in the middle
that
we're bad at, right?
Right, right?
Right. So where we're kind of paying attention and we're the ones monitoring whatever the machine's doing,
mm-hmm.
that's when our minds tend to wander and you just want to start looking at TikToks,
or
right,
you're
or whatever.
Eating, you're on your phone. Oh, like you see that all the time.
So good at driving, good at not driving.
Right.
The middle part. For me, I think Toyota has become... So Toyota did something interesting, right? They had, I think, one of the kind of oldest infotainment systems in the biz, and they decided, you know, we're going to form a team. And I was talking to a lot of the Toyota engineers, and they were surprised that, like, the Japanese overlords, Japanese in command, you know, allowed America to actually take the lead on it. So they formed this team out of Plano, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hired like 250 employees, computer programmers, and then they created this whole system. And for me, the problem that I hate on all these systems is when it makes you log in as if you're logging into your computer.
I can't
stand the profile. And Mercedes is the same thing, because I was just driving a Mercedes that had the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, like, hey, you want to be a guest? And I'm like, yeah, okay, I can be a guest. But I really don't want to log into my car. I don't need that kind of a personal connection with my car. To me, it's a tool.
Right.
And it's a tool that provides me a lot of pleasure. And anything that takes me away from that, I'm kind of bummed out about.
Yeah, I feel like it's hard to say, because, like, people who want to log in and have everything set up, I feel like it would work if
Tesla does a good job with that.
Well, I feel like it would work if it was your only car. Like, if you get in the car, you sit in the car, it scans your face, because we have like facial recognition.
Yeah.
It memorizes all your presets and everything, and that probably could be good, especially if you have, like, a spouse that will drive the car, too. It can remember the two, but I think... Maybe that's the element that we don't get to test out, because, I mean, we're always driving different cars. Every week, every day, we're kind of getting into something else. So, like, when you have to log in and do all that stuff, and we're kind of setting it up for the first time, and that's what's a pain in the butt.
All right. Let me ask you this. All right. So I hear that excuse a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that excuse from journalists who say that a lot of these cars, once you figure them out and once you get used to them, then... the kind of the annoyance factor goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But good design is good design.
Right.
You know what I mean? In some ways, if you can, whether it's furniture or whether it's technology, if you can get in the thing and you can make it work right away without having, you know, to use a lot of... I'll give you an example of bad design, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is true. We just did this. So we had three Toyotas, and I'm picking on Toyota. I don't mean to pick on you, Toyota. we'll pick on somebody else in a second. So we had three Toyotas.
Uh-huh.
Recently, we had a... Land Cruiser,
Tacoma?
A Tacoma mm-hmm. that we owned, and then Lexus GX, the Lexus Toyota. And we do a lot of towing testing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to tow heavy, over 3,000 pounds, you need a brake controller.
Yep.
And every vehicle that I've ever tested, you take the plug, you plug it into the brake controller, and it knows that it's plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle knows, and then the lights work, and then the brakes work. Toyota has a system where you actually have to turn on the brake controller.
Oh, so it's not automated.
Yeah, and so, you know, I kind of consider ourselves as experts. And so for the longest time, we have a wireless brake controller, because we didn't know that buried like 14 menus in was a little menu that allowed you to turn off and turn on the brake controller. Right, and that's kind of my point. When it gets too technologically advanced
mm-hmm.
and you get to this point where, like, the machine is controlling you instead of you controlling the machine because of the technology or because of the complexity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's have some more fun. All right, we've driven a lot of cars this year.
Yeah.
Right, I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Oh gosh.
What are? Give me your top three, Sophia, and then I'll ask you. You can think about it, Sophia.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh crap.
I'll give you, let me start. And I'll let you
sure.
Start about
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
All right. So I really enjoyed the Land Cruiser.
Uh-huh.
I think Toyota did a really. There you go, Toyota. I think they did a really good job with mm-hmm. that. And I'm going to pick another Toyota because we just have it at our office right now. But we had the Tacoma Trail Hunter,
yeah,
which has the snorkel, which has, you know, the bronze wheels, mm-hmm. which has all of the good off-road. And, dude, I had that thing parked in front of my house, and my neighbors came up, and he drives a Rivian, one of them, and he's like, that is a beautiful truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think Toyota, maybe not the Tacoma, but the Trail Hunter version of
yeah.
it. Downside, expensive, $65,000.
Yeah. Which used to be Tundra money, but yeah. everything's yeah. just gotten so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess for me, my top three, the GX actually was one of them. So going back to Lexus, I actually prefer the GX over the Land Cruiser, I think. The other car I really liked is the Corvette E-Ray. I had one of those for a week. I think GM did a phenomenal job with that. It's an exotic car, but it doesn't have, or it's an exotic looking car, but it's more reasonably priced and it's quick as hell. So I really appreciate that. And then actually it was the third one's probably the new Model 3 Performance that Rob just got, my editor. I really liked how fast it was. It's $55,000. It has a ton of tech in it, and it's just a really good all-around car. And I appreciate the fact that it's a car and not like an SUV like everyone else is driving. So I'd say those are probably my three.
Okay, you gave me extra time. I'm still debating it on mine.
It's hard to choose.
It is very difficult. Lexus GX, we actually had this conversation at dinner last night. I think that car specifically, even though it's not like a vehicle that I would see myself owning, I think they just designed it exactly for what the customer base wanted. It looks fantastic. It now has the Overtrail model. And I mean, it just really nails what it needed to do. No bias here, but I also think the Toyota Camry. I was very impressed by the Camry. We do own one. For those of you that don't know, we have a long-term one. And that was one of those vehicles I had like lower expectations going into filming it, because it kind of is like this in a sense, where like the front end is new, the side panels are mostly similar, and I was like, well, they just kind of phoned it in and didn't make an all new product. But when you drive the vehicle, the new fifth gen hybrid system, I was very impressed with it. It's a lot quieter than it was before, has a lot more power, and in our fuel economy test, it's getting really, really good fuel economy.
Yeah, what are you getting?
We just did a highway fuel economy test. It was getting 48, which is what it's rated at.
This is mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, and in the city, we're currently conducting that test, but most of the trips that I've just experienced firsthand owning the vehicle, it's been like 53.
I remember when like the first Prius came out, and then the Honda
Insight,
mm-hmm. and that was very compromised, right? Two-seater, had those funny like Buick-like covers for the rear wheels.
the rear arch covers, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the first cars to have stop-start, and that thing barely got like, I want to say 40, and now you've got a Camry, right, that's huge, that seats five people comfortably, that's getting Prius-like numbers, pretty staggering.
Yeah, pretty good.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you want my third one?
Yeah, of course.
This one goes back a while, so I don't know if it technically classifies as last year, but I thought the Chevy Trax, I was impressed with that. Ooh. For the money, like, that car is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can sit there and debate about the reliability long-term of a three-cylinder. But I was impressed by the power, and, you know, fully loaded out being under 25 is unheard of nowadays. Yeah. So it was just so refreshing to get into that and be like, you have a decent amount of equipment and features and space for under 25, like legit under 25.
Yeah, I think anything that's in the starts with two nowadays is so, because average new car price in America is what, 48-ish?
Yeah. Well, it was going almost to 50, and I think it's been coming down, thankfully. But yeah, it's hard to find anything that's under 40 nowadays for new.
All right, this next one we're going to do a little differently.
Okay.
And you know this is coming, right? So we're going to be talking about the cars. I'm not going to say worse cars, because there's no really bad cars out there as we're sitting here. Guess the Volvo. But there are certain cars that didn't meet expectations. Let's call it that. The ones that didn't meet the expectations that the car set. So we're going to each go and we'll do one. So I want to do top three. I'll do one, you do one, then you do one, right? So I'll start.
Okay.
So this year, the one that I found very not expectation meeting was the BMW XM, which is this very expensive $160,000 hybrid V8. And it just seems to answer the question that nobody asks, which is like, you know, what would like a Hungarian gangster want to drive, right? I mean, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, the car's not a great looking
right?
car.
It's like everything has gone not to 11, but to 15.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why.
Right.
And I don't think, I think the sales in America certainly are kind of, you know, also showing that emotion.
Mm-hmm. Seems ridiculous to me. And then the ride quality, not impressed with.
Yeah. Mm,
no, very hard ride and just expensive. And I know the looks of it, it's different, but at the same time, I'm kind of just like, why don't you just get an X5M competition for a lot less?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And BMW, I think, has been hitting them out of the ballpark, especially with the electric cars. I think they're the only car company, for the most part, that has said, you know, we're going to make electric cars that look and seem just like their internal combustion engine cars, right? So 4 Series i4 is the same as a 4 Series internal combustion, same thing with the 5 Series, same thing with the 7 Series. I think that was a smart way to go. Yeah. How about you? Any cars that didn't meet your expectations?
I mean, I can think of one that comes to mind pretty quick, and I hate to say it, it's the Toyota BZ4X. Okay. Yeah.
And the Subaru version of it.
And the Subaru version of it, which is a Toyota. And it's like, when you look at that car, like I remember when we first drove it, I think it was like 2 years ago now, like it was a fine car if you look at it just like as an SUV, if it was gas powered, but as an EV, it just fails miserably. The range isn't good. It charges really slow. It's a really weird looking car as well. And I remember Toyota was doing insanely like lucrative lease deals on it because they were trying to move it. Like I think you can get one for like, at the time, it was like under $100 a month, which you technically got a cheaper car.
$9 a month
Nissan Leaf, which I'm like, oh, that's actually, I mean, I think a lot of people would pay $9 a month for that car.
And to be fair, charging is worse, range is worse.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Right, but then that BZ4X, you can get it up to 52,000, like 53,000 at the top end, which it's just definitely not worth that much. I mean, that car to me felt like a compliance EV that Toyota was like forced to make. Because they make amazing hybrids. Their hybrids are in such high demand. They make a ton of money on them. But that EV was just a big disappointment. But as a car, it was fine. But as an EV, it just failed for me miserably. So that's what I would say.
All right. Your turn, Mason.
I'm going to say Mazda CX-70. Mm. And I'm going to go ahead and preface this just by saying that I don't hate the vehicle. I think it's actually pretty good in a lot of ways. But it just doesn't make sense. Like, the fact that the CX-70 is exactly the same size as the CX-90, I think when we all, you know, heard that the CX-70 was coming, we were so excited for it because we were like, what is Mazda going to do with this? And there's so much potential, especially nowadays in the SUV market. And then to like go see it and just be like, this looks familiar. And then like you start poking around and you're like, well, this is actually the same thing.
Right.
You know, and the CX-90 is not a bad vehicle. It has a lot of different merits that a lot of people might appreciate. But the CX-70 specifically, I just don't understand, especially when you consider that the price is almost identical to the CX-90 because, of course, it's the identical vehicle, just without a third row. So that car just doesn't make sense to me.
If they just called it a CX-90 2-row, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, but a lot of manufacturers are doing that, right? Where they're basically just pulling the rear seat and just creating an easy variant.
Right. Although typically when they do that, they also will shorten the vehicle and make it look a little different. But the fact that it's the exact same size was kind of just like, I mean, I understand why Mazda was doing it because they wanted to have best-in-class space on the inside. But I think people who want to remove the third row, they also want a slightly smaller vehicle.
All right, here's another one of mine. All right, it's going to be a little bit controversial because we just named it as one of the best.
Uh-huh.
So the Lexus GX 550, if you get it as the Overtrail, perfectly fine, really good off-road. Actually, we took it off-road, and I was surprised how good it is off-road. But if you get the premium with the 22s.
Or the luxury, you mean?
The luxury with the 22s, the ride is really not good. It's very jittery. It's very bumpy. Mm. It's not very sorted. It just feels like, you know, those low profile tires just really, you know, make you pay the price in terms of ride quality.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one thing. Cause I haven't had the Overtrail yet. I only had the luxury plus with the 22s. And I did notice that like, cause the car doesn't have air suspension.
Yeah.
It just has adaptive dampers, but those low profile tires, they don't help the ride.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think you actually texted me.
I did.
You were like, hey, do you remember if the ride quality was terrible on this? And I was like, yes, it was.
Which is unusual because, you know, Lexus is, if anything, known for, you know, playing it safe and never
The thing I will say about it is they make the TX. So, like, right. for the person that's concerned about ride quality, they make that. Like, that's the good thing about Lexus, especially recently. It's like there's a crossover of any size, like, that you can get. So if you're interested in ride quality, the TX makes so much more sense, and then also has a much better third row, better cargo capacity, better fuel economy. Our GX got horrible fuel economy. We tested it out over a week, and it was, like, 16 and a half.
Yeah, so let's take a break before your turn.
Okay.
And let's talk about a trend in industry that I think people inherently know about, but maybe don't quite understand. So the trend, of course, is that every eight-cylinder is now a six-cylinder, every eight-cylinder is a six-cylinder turbo, and every six-cylinder is a four-cylinder turbo, right? Mm-hmm. Turbification, is that a word, of the industry?
We'll make one.
except the reason for that is that in the Toyota Tacoma, for instance, you know, you go down two cylinders, you get better fuel economy, but as Ford has proven time and time again with the EcoBoost, you know, it's Eco or Boost. Very rarely do you get both economy and boost. So yes, four-cylinder turbos can be more fuel efficient than six cylinders, but if you start like working them, you know, drive them hard, tow with them, you know, drive in the mountains, they become very thirsty very quickly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, I guess they also refer to it as engine downsizing. I mean, we've been kind of dealing with that for, I mean, what is it, like 15, 20 years now and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I, as an enthusiast, like, I always prefer the bigger engine. Like, you get the sound, you get the linear feel, the turbos. Some brands do better turbos than others.
So, and in some ways, you know, they can be much more fuel efficient. So we had one of the first Hellcats. I drove that to California, and at 75 miles an hour, that thing was turning over at like 2,000 RPM. So it's just kind of this lopey, you know,
right.
And I was getting over 30 mpg
wow.
in a Hellcat. If you floored it and the supercharger came on, then all of a sudden it was like
just
in the teens.
Guzzle the gas.
Yeah, right. But just kind of just, you know, driving across the country, it was great. All right, what's your next car that didn't meet expectations?
I guess the next one that comes to mind would probably be the new Subaru Forester. I know you haven't had a chance to drive it yet.
And I did not set this up. I really didn't.
No, and it's, I'm just trying to remember because we drive, I don't even know how many cars I drive.
They had a program for it recently.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was a fine car. Yeah. Like, Subaru does really good, like, just everyday Joe cars that you can drive every day with standard all-wheel drive, decent fuel economy. Their tech still is, like, in the works. Like, they're trying to make it better, but the Forester, it was just more of a disappointment in the sense that I feel like Subaru didn't push the envelope enough for it. It was very bland. It was very boring. I didn't love the styling of the car. It was still roomy on the inside, and you know, I think the people who buy a Subaru Forester, they're going to be perfectly fine with it. But for me, when I look at that car and I look at the competitive set, like look at the Toyota RAV4. It does so well, and it's getting older. It's about to be replaced. The hybrid model kills it. And then the CR-V, which is also a hybrid, although Honda's another discussion on, you know, where they're kind of going with their product lineup. I just think that Subaru could have done more. So for me, it was just a little bland, but not really a horrible car, just bland.
Have you driven it?
The Forester?
Yeah.
Yes, we were at the media drive for it. I thought exactly the same thing. It's, you know, it's a Forester, and I think they did what they maybe needed to, at least they added the features, I think, is the important thing for the Forester. They added the vented seats and they added the 360 camera, which is what people were looking for. The styling is not for me.
Right.
I, like you said, I don't think it pushed the envelope at all. It just looks like a Forester still.
Is there a Timberline version of it?
They haven't revealed the Wilderness version.
Oh, Wilderness,
yet.
Sorry.
Yeah,
Timberline,
not yet.
That's Ford.
Same deal, but yeah, that will come.
And then a hybrid's coming.
When the hybrid comes, I think that's a lot more potential for them. Because Subaru, I know that they would sell as many hybrids as they could make. They just need to get it out.
Right.
All right, what's your next one?
I have terrible memory, Roman. I'm literally sitting here trying to go through my mind of like.
Usually, I have to go through my phone. Yeah, like, what have I driven?
I'll let you think. I'll give you another one.
Okay.
I just drove this one to the airport, so it's easy. Dodge Hornet.
Oh, that's a
guy. Yeah, I hate that car.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I got to go to Italy and drive the Alfa Romeo version of that, you know. Yeah. And that's actually a really good car, the plug-in hybrid.
The Tonale.
Yeah,
the Tonale.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, unfortunate naming, but it's actually not bad. You know, it's got that kind of Italian
flair. Plus that green color.
Yeah.
Verde.
And then somehow lost in translation when it became a Hornet.
Yeah. Although we all know that the Hornet's going to outsell the Tonale because of the fleet sales, most likely. Oh, I've been seeing a ton.
And that there's nothing else the Dodge is selling right now. So.
True. Yeah. It is their newest product. Yeah.
Yes, their newest. And I believe their only product at this point until the
new Charger comes in.
Yeah. So not a lot of choice in the Dodge showroom.
That's true.
Yeah. The thing about that car is it's also heavily discounted as well. Yeah. Like if you go to a dealer website, you can see them.
Yeah.
Like,
sometimes the screens are tiny on it.
Yeah.
I was just whinging about how I hate technology, but that one is just too small.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the technology, I wanted to come back. So Honda as a brand, I've always personally loved Honda. It's been one of my favorite brands, and their cars aren't bad per se, but I just feel like they've been kind of falling behind. I don't know if you guys feel the same way. Like their infotainment screens, for example, look at a new Pilot. It's their big three-row SUV. It comes with a 9-inch screen at the biggest end. And then the lower trims have a 7-inch screen.
All right, Prologue, is that on your list?
I mean, that's a Chevy Blazer EV.
I thought of my one.
Oh, you did?
I thought of it.
Oh, God. What is yours before you forget?
The Acura ZDX, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
ZDX.
Same problem.
Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah. Right, because it's those cars, I understand why Honda and Acura wanted to kind of go with going to GM for a partner, because they needed something for a stopgap. But I also feel like the people who are brand loyalists, they're going to go to a Honda and Acura dealership, and I feel like even they are going to notice, this is not the same as my Odyssey, or not the same as my Pilot or Passport, whatever. What's going on here? And then they're going to realize they're going to get into their friend's GM car and be like, this sounds like this Honda that I just drove.
Yeah.
And stuff. And these are non-car people, because we see everything, but it's always kind of funny to see what a non-car person is going to notice, because it kind of brings you back into perspective.
Yeah, and guys, I'm the oldest here by at least 2 years. so I still remember when badge engineering was a thing back in the 80s, right? Uh-huh. And now it kind of came back. I think the 86 brought it back with the BRZ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Fiata. And it never worked back then, and it doesn't work now, right?
Yeah.
I just feel it confuses people, and I get why companies do it, because it's a kind of a much, Honda needs an electric car. At least they felt they needed an electric car, and they didn't have anything that they could just build.
Yeah.
Actually, they had the little Honda that they never brought, right? The Honda E, the little tiny, which actually I would love. They should have brought that instead of the Prologue. Come on, who wouldn't love a fishbowl on their screen? But the problem with badge engineering is it creates all kinds of brand confusion. And then you're sitting in a Honda that's really a GM, that's really a Honda. And I think it's kind of cynical, because what you're saying to your customers is that you don't know what a Honda means.
Yeah,
right? You're distilling the essence of what your DNA is and changing it around. And I think that is just a problematic way of selling cars.
Yeah, because I think Honda specifically, we had a CR-V. I just drove that right before I came to this event. And I feel like that even right before it, we had a Civic Type R. And I was like, the CR-V, it actually has just a tiny bit of the Civic Type R DNA. It still has nice steering. The feel is good. And then if you get into a Prologue, you're just
this isn't a Honda.
It feels like a Chevy Blazer.
Right.
So I think Civic's still red hot. I think, the Civic still has a mojo going on. Yeah. I think the Accord is kind of, I'm just talking about Honda in terms of its product line now. I think the Accord is a safe.
Yep.
They didn't, like you kind of said in some of the previous cars, they didn't go out of their way to make it more interesting or more exciting, but they did what they needed to do.
Right.
But I think, where the rubber hits the road is on their crossovers. And right now they're, CRV, HRV, these are not, they do not stir passion in me, at least.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they're playing it too safe.
Yeah, exactly. That's
when Toyota, I feel like they're pushing the envelope and they're seeing the results in it. I'm kind of just I'm waiting for Honda to do something more.
With the RAV4, which is America's most popular car, sells over 400,000 units a year, right? You've got the Adventure, you've got the Prime, right? You've got all these different versions. CRV is number two, but basically you've got two choices.
Right.
Yeah, in terms of trim levels,
they added
models.
The fuel cell model for 2024.
Oh yeah,
the plug-in hybrid.
That's what's selling hot cakes.
Yes.
Well, even Mason, you were telling me you just reviewed the new Civic Sport.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be also my problem with Honda, is they're very conservative with how the equipment is arranged among the trim levels as well. We just did a Civic Sport, and of course the Civic, we drove that in Canada a couple months ago, and it has a lot of merits. Like, you gotta love a Civic Sport Touring. Like, it's really nice for its segment. But then, like, the Sport, it had so many missing features, and the price has gradually risen, you know, each consecutive model year significantly. Like, we did a Civic Sport, it was almost $28,000, and we had no heated seats. It still had, like, the really small 7-inch display that it really... It doesn't even have software in it. Like, we talk about, you know, software, it literally, like, has almost no software to it. Mm-hmm. And you have to plug in your phone, no wireless ability, you know.
So really, if it was, like, $22,000, it'd be acceptable.
It would be acceptable, but it's not acceptable,
but it's at that price point.
And the Civic Sport doesn't even have the hybrid powertrain. You have to get the Sport Hybrid, which is additional. That's more like $30,000 at least for that model.
All right, so we've been kind of negative talking about you know, cars that didn't meet expectations. Let's go brand by brand and talk about what car you think is not the best, but the one that you would lust after, like the one that is like the one that you want. So I'll give you an example, okay? Hyundai, Ioniq,
Ioniq 5N.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Drove that to the airport. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So that is something that's really pushing the technology. Mm-hmm. Right. Now you've got a car that's electric that you can shift. Who would have thunk?
Right.
Right. That you can make sound like, you know, Star Wars if you wanted to. How was it? Tell me about it. I never got to drive it. Yeah,
it was really, really good. We missed the media drive too, but we just got one on loan. And I just had it for the weekend. And oh my gosh, it was so much fun. Like I drove the wheels off of it, because on all the Kentucky back roads, I mean, it was so much fun out of an EV, which is something that I feel like I miss. Mm-hmm. Like we get behind the wheel of a lot of EVs and stuff, and they're fast, they're quick. You do a couple accelerations and then you're like, okay, you know, I'm kind of done with that. Right. This car was one that I was like actively enjoying, and I took family members out on a ride, and they're like,
is it good enough where it doesn't like beat you up?
Yeah,
is it?
It has adaptive dampers, it's compliant enough. It's not like as comfortable as a limited model, but I found the ride to be fine, and it's just a lot of fun. Like, to push the button, and then you can do the ingrain button to do like the crazy acceleration. It's solid.
The fake shifts are definitely interesting in that car. Like, and it's funny because Hyundai did it first. You'd think like BMW would do that first, or Porsche would do that, but it was Hyundai that did it first.
Dude, Hyundai is just killing it right now. Yeah. And Kia, right? They're just and what they're doing, which is also I think very hard, is so the car over here, right?
Yep.
Pretty much a 10-year product cycle. Mm-hmm. Right? It's almost 10 years since the last generation came out. Hyundai and Kia, they're like rocking every 2 years, right? And not just doing evolution. I mean, look at the latest Santa Fe, which we should talk about, by the way.
should we?
Yes, we should. So the Santa Fe, you know, I saw it. I went to Korea. I saw it before it was unveiled. And I thought to myself, wow, that is a good-looking car. It looks like a baby Suburban, right? So they made it square jaw. They made it much more masculine. Except you bought one, and what happened?
Well, for those of you that don't know, we bought one. We were one of the very first people that had one in the country. We bought it back in February, actually, right before the Chicago Auto Show. And we didn't even make it home from the dealership when it started giving us transmission issues. We had to take it back to the dealership, and then they quickly diagnosed they had to replace the transmission, which they did. They replaced the transmission, and then we drove the second transmission around for, I don't know, it was like probably 1,000 miles at least, maybe 1,500 miles, and then we took it on a longer road trip, and then the issue presented itself again. So then we had to take it back to the dealership, where they also diagnosed that it was needing of another transmission. Wow. So the vehicle was just bought back.
Wow.
Now, of course, that experience doesn't represent everyone's experience with it, but the Santa Fe was under recall for transmission issues. Actually, another issue apparently was a thing where if you put it in park, it would roll away. So that was something that was under recall as well. So the Santa Fe, I have mixed emotions about, because I still really love the car. Hmm. Like, we drove it on a long road trip, and besides for the transmission issues, it was so incredibly comfortable. There's a ton of room because it's a big boxy SUV, so you have like loads of headroom. The third row is not even bad at all. And we were actually getting really good fuel economy out of it, like 30 miles a gallon, which I think is crazy, because when you make a big square, it's obviously not aerodynamic, but somehow they made it aerodynamic.
So let me ask you this, right? There's that like old saying that you should never buy a car in its first year of production.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is that, does this hold true for you? You think that's what happened here?
Yeah, I would say so, because even if you're looking to like buy one right now, they've already supposedly fixed the issue, and you know, all the ones that are being built currently don't have that issue. And you can also just get the hybrid version, which is also what I wanted to say, because when we bought the vehicle, the gas was the first one that came out. We would have bought the hybrid otherwise, and the hybrid actually has a completely different transmission setup.
Right.
So that's definitely the one I would get.
Hmm. How about Mercedes? Is there a car? We were just talking about that last night, right?
That stands out? Or
yeah, a Mercedes. Ooh. That you think would be like, I haven't driven the new electric G-Wagon.
I haven't driven that one either.
I think I would really love to get my hands on.
Yeah.
And the G, of course, has always been a favorite. It's just gotten so expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I've definitely driven some of the newest Mercedes. Like, I just drove their new C63S E-Performance, which is the plug-in hybrid, four-cylinder turbo AMG C-Class, which a lot of people were pissed when Mercedes did that because they got rid
of that.
How
much is that, Sophia?
It was about $90,000.
Yeah. For a C-Class.
For a C-Class. Now, and the fact that they basically cut the engine in half, because you used to have a 4-liter twin-turbo V8, now it's a 2-liter turbo 4 with an electric motor. But it does make like 671 horsepower.
So this is kind of where we're at with also the new 5 Series, right?
Right.
Where the complaint on these both of these cars is that you're fixing things that... you're fixing problems that you created by making them too heavy,
mm-hmm.
right? So because you're trying to make the car handle as well as it should, mm-hmm. you have to use all these like new technologies because of the fact that the car has a big battery and that it's, you know, much heavier than the outgoing. Is that a sense that you got?
Yeah, I mean, like you, it's hard to tell without driving the old C63 back-to-back, although I will say that the old C63 was not also a lightweight. It was one of the heavier. It was one of the heavier vehicles in the class, but they added about 700 pounds of weight in that car. Now, to really feel the difference, I'd have to take it to a track, but I mean, out on the road, we were on Malibu just driving that in California, and the thing launches ballistically fast. I think I got like 2.9 seconds to 60 in it, which is like Model 3 performance fast. And I feel like that's what Mercedes was targeting. They're like, we're tired of seeing those pesky little Teslas beat our C63, let's do this now. So I didn't really notice the weight difference in just back roads, and you definitely don't notice it when you put your foot down. But and then there's the sound of the engine, which I guess if you guys like a V8, you're gonna miss it. That's the one thing is that you do lose is that V8. But really, what I don't like about some of the Mercedes products is their interiors. Like they don't have the same solid build quality they used to have. Like they used to, you get into some of these Mercedes products, and I would hear squeaks and rattles coming from the door panel and the dash. You push a little portion of the dash, and it'd start squeaking a little bit. And I was like, this is not good to see in a $50,000 car, let alone a $90,000 car.
So. All right. Before we wrap this up, there's two more kind of subjects I want to touch on. So I'll start with another car.
Okay.
You think about it. Most improved.
Most improved.
Right.
Most
improved. A car that is really improved. And I'll give you an example of what we had.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a Hummer EV when it first came out.
Oh.
And it left me stranded.
I remember that video. You were not happy.
Oh, in the rain. In a left turn where there were 5 miles of cars.
In rush hour traffic, yeah.
In rush hour traffic, and you couldn't move it.
Stressful.
Yeah. And then we took it off-road, and instead of kind of going off-road, because it was so heavy, right, over 9,000 pounds, it just kind of dug 4 holes.
Mm.
The air suspension gave up the ghost right away because, once again, it was a little on the fat side. I was going to say junky side. But recently, GM let me drive the new Hummer SUV.
Okay.
Off-road, and silently they've been working on that thing for 2 years. Now, GM had a really good off-road team when they had the original
mm-hmm.
Hummer, and then they kind of, had to rebuild it. And they did that with, I think, the new Colorado Canyon Twins, especially the Bison version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that team is back together to some extent, and I think that they've really got their off-road chops back on. And the vehicle is much improved. It's actually one of the better off-roaders. If you can get past the fact that you're off-roading, $100,000 plus car, which is not an easy thing to get past
because
it's a lot of money. But I would give that car, even though it doesn't look any different, I think they've done a lot of both software and suspension tuning to just make it much more usable. You know, it's still very heavy. It still, is over-batteried probably, and in some ways probably overpriced. But, Kind of without knowing it, it's gotten much better. How about you? Any like most improved vehicles that you've seen where you drove one and then you thought to yourself, you know, now the newer version is better?
Ooh.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
I can take it.
Yeah, go for it.
Like if you have
I'll give you a second. I think some of the GM vehicles that I bought recently, I would say like the Equinox we just got back from that last week. Mm-hmm. Talk about most improved. That's a glow up because the current one is not good at all, really. And the new one is, I would say, not the best in the segment, but it's also, it looks good. Mm-hmm. The interior, they've really improved with the storage solutions, which was something that I was lacking before. The tech has been upgraded on all models, so not just the loaded ones. I would also say the same kind of applies to the Chevy Traverse and GMC Acadia, those twins. Especially the Acadia, because it used to be small, and then now it's gigantic.
I actually like the Blazer EV. You know,
really?
It had a rough rollout, but it's probably one of the widest cars in its segment. And I like the technology in the thing. I like the way that the car, you know, it's weird. A lot of, especially European luxury brands, I'll point to Land Rover Defender as one of the best examples of that. I seem to have forgotten that those screens have color. Right? It's like 14 shades of gray.
Right.
I'm like, come on, guys. Whereas GM understands that, right? Yeah. Their screens are so bold and bright,
right,
and cheerful in a lot of ways. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I think GM's starting to get its mojo back in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and the pricing, I will also add, didn't go up a lot, which I was pleasantly surprised by.
So I think I figured it out.
Okay.
And you're definitely going to disagree with me on this one.
All right, let's hear it.
The Lincoln Nautilus. I know you hate that car so much. Well, think about how awful the previous gen was, though, Roman. Like, it was a guzzied up version of the Edge.
It
was very old on the inside. It was very thirsty. Ooh. I know. He hates the steering wheel. He hates the big screen.
And
it's built in China.
And I don't mind the China. That's fine. I don't understand the China bit. I mean, doesn't Ford have plants in America? But forget the China bit. But giant screen, 48-inch screen, mm-hmm. remember right?
Right.
Except it presents like two bits of information. So I don't need 48 inches telling me that the weather outside is going to be, you know, come on.
So that's the thing is, like, have you spent a week with it and, like, actually, like...
I have not spent a week. I can't get past that steering. That is a weird...
The squircle?
Is that what that is? Yeah. The squircle, yeah. That is horrible.
The square and circular steering wheel.
Okay, you're going to get me started on this. Do I need 4,000 ways to adjust a seat? I get that Ford is trying. Everybody's like, oh, you can adjust your seats perfectly. I'm like, no, I can't find a comfortable position because there's 5,000 different ways to adjust that thing, right?
Right.
Right. Either your back's like this and your back end looks like that, right? Or your stomach's like that. And I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, I also agree. I mean, most people are symmetrical, so I don't think you need like your left thigh up and your right thigh. You know,
I will agree that is a little weird, but you know what? When I had that car for a week, I had the hybrid. It was the reserve and that red carpet red with the black appearance package. That thing, like, I had it at the same time as the new Porsche Panamera. That car was like $150,000. The Lincoln was $60,000 or $70,000. I was expecting to ignore the Lincoln and drive the Porsche. But I found myself picking the Lincoln every time because the screen, even though it's like really overwhelming, once you get it all set up and you kind of have it exactly the way you want, I thought it worked really well. I thought the ride quality was good. It was the hybrid. It got like 33 mpg, around 600 miles of range. And I just found it so much more appealing than a Lexus RX. And I've always particularly really liked Lexus.
I think you're right. I need to actually go back and get on that horse.
You need to spend a week with it and just kind of really just try out. Because once you set the seat to your liking, you don't touch it.
It could be one of those situations where you need to spend, like you said, some time with it. And it didn't help that our screen turned Chinese.
Yes. When you showed me that picture, I didn't believe you. I was like, no, you're BSing me, Roman. I was like, holy crap.
And then once it goes Chinese, you don't know how to get it back to English because you don't know the Chinese word for English.
Right. those ones that we were driving in Lincoln's, to be fair to Lincoln, those were pre-production prototypes.
They were, and then I had a great conversation with the designer, and he's like, I'm so proud of the fact that we, you know, put the vent controls into the screen, and I was please.
But they give you an oscillate mode, Roman, where it'll just kind of, it'll move on its own. I'm like, I kind of like that.
So I need it forward. Lincoln, if you're listening to me, I really would love to get behind the wheel and actually, you know, I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, last one. This. What are you most looking forward to in the future? I'll start again. All right. Okay. What cars that are coming? And we've got to, and, you know, we try to buy cars that there's a lot of buzz around that should give you a hint as to one that's coming. And so the two that we've got left for this year that we're buying is the ID Buzz. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, I was a little disappointed when I heard the range.
Yep.
You know, a car van that has American tradition of road tripping.
Right, and only 260.
I think it's
like
less than that. I want to say it's under.
No, you're right. It's 230.
Yeah, 230.
231. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, and then you know, price is starting at 60,000 basically. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yep.
So we've got one coming. So you know, I'm withhold judgment, but I'm super excited about that car. I mm-hmm. think the design is just you know right on. When I was at the LA Auto Show and I saw everybody flock to it, I thought to myself, this is a car we have to buy
right.
because obviously we make money when you watch our videos.
Right.
And then we got the new Maverick. Okay. Coming as well, because
yep.
for the first time you can combine both a hybrid and four-wheel drive, which you couldn't do in the past, and which you still can't do in the Santa Cruz. Go
right.
figure, even though it's based on a car, just like the Maverick is in the Escape, that you can get that.
Right.
How about you? What do you look
for? For me, it's, I mean, I'm a sucker for wagons and that new BMW M5 Touring that they just revealed in that Isle of Man green with the plug-in hybrid, 717 horsepower. I'm very much looking forward to that. And it's also, for a car like that, it's hard to say, but it's kind of a value. Because you look at the $150,000 price tag, a Mercedes equivalent would easily be $200,000.
I say it's a value a year from now.
Yeah,
that's right. It's just buy when it's used, when it starts depreciating. But yeah, I mean, that car, I'm very much looking forward to driving just because the fact that BMW finally caved and they're like, we're going to give you a wagon M5, like that for me is like, I'm looking forward to that. So.
Yeah, if anybody buys it, that's besides automotive journalists.
Yeah, it'll be like 10 people that buy it, but that's fine.
It's good, though, that they're offering it. Yeah, I have to say that's probably one of like the cars that I'm most looking forward to driving.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm like talking on a normal, like mainstream basis, I imagine there's going to be a new Hyundai Palisade coming out shortly.
Ooh,
they've seen a bunch of spy shots of it. So
that thing's been red hot since it's come out.
I know. Yeah. It's been one of those cars that
and
people
the
just love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Palisade, Telluride twins. So I'm very excited to
see
it.
You know, when I got into that, I had just driven the new BMW 7, X7, and that thing had nothing on the Palisade or the Telluride in terms of interior quality build, in terms of...
It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable how luxurious and expensive that looks. All right, guys. Well, I hope you've enjoyed listening to our little discussion. I want to thank Volvo especially for flying all three of us out here.
Yeah.
Go over to Sofian's Redline Reviews and Car Confections.
Yeah.
If you want, you know, much more thorough review of this car than TFL I can ever provide. And if you do want to check out what TFL is up to, check out alltfl.com. And we will see you next time. Thanks for watching.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.